This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Revolution, guys.
It was a revolution, and that sounded fantastic.
Yeah, that was the best. On our end, when we hear these things, it's always through that Zoom speaker, and it's as though the person taking your order through the drive-thru at Arby's is singing our theme song.
Yeah, and it's Roseanne Barr.
And it's Roseanne Barr doing that. Welcome back to Doing It with Danny Zucker and Jenny Johnson.
I'm Danny Zucker.
I'm Jenny Johnson,
yes.
And we'll get into everything, but I think first things first, we've got a very special guest here. Jenny's accused me of not researching the guests or not knowing the guests. So I did a lot of research this time, and I just want to say our guest, he's the lead singer of one of my favorite bands, Smashing Pumpkins, and I have just, from the minute you grew your hair out, though.
Yeah. Right?
I have this right,
yeah.
Did I not?
Yeah. This is it. He's not only a talented musician and not a fan of pumpkins.
Yeah,
he's destructive. No, that's my understanding. But aside from his career with the Smashing Pumpkins, Billy Corbin. It's a documentary. It's my friend Billy Corbin, and we will get into all of Billy's work. So we will just this will be a love fest.
Well, I know you didn't really word the Smashing Pumpkins, but you know that guy. You know that guy can't make cutting edge, fast paced narrative documentaries. I'll tell you that much.
I got to tell you, first of all, I've got this like Anya Taylor Joy at the Golden Globes thing going on here with my hair keeps falling in front of my eye. I'll try to keep that out of the way. Not to make you feel insecure about it, Danny, because now, yes.
Yeah. Also, honestly, Billy, a cool thing you can do is like what kids do, where they constantly do a hair toss, you know, where you just
I do that.
That's way cooler looking, by the way.
No, I mean Danny and I look like the how it started, how it's going meme for like 2020. Yeah. I feel
it's really and by the way, if you're just listening to this, I'm how it started. If you're watching it, you'll know that's not true.
The before.
Yeah, I've always been a before. Like, yeah. I mean, honestly, I'm always a before. I mean, unless it's like before he quit meth, like then I'm the before.
But I feel like even in the maternity ward when you were a baby, they put your like thing, and then all the other babies are like, "This is a before baby."
Yeah,
the after babies.
And for people who are also listening and not watching, so I got a Room Raiders on. So I was promoting our documentary last year for HBO. Called 537 Votes, about the 20th anniversary of the Florida recount in Bush v. Gore. And we shameless plug there, but Room Raider gave me like a six or like, yeah, like six and a half. And by the way, on a Miami-Dade County Public Schools curve, that's like a B minus. So that's like that's really good. But like, I needed to up my game a little bit. I feel like it's probably still a little, like it's a little too busy, but I put that back there because for like 15 years, I would always say like, you know, we made documentaries that people watched, not that people gave awards to.
Yeah.
And Danny said the most hilarious and brilliant thing on the Modern Family, on the documentary. that which was amazing. That okay. went with, and such a great idea too, because like the access was like just it was beyond the cast. And like, yeah. listen, if there, I don't know why there wasn't a doc limited series about the writers' room. I would watch that shit for hours or days. Like,
oh my god,
but you said something like that you went for 20 years of your career, like skillfully avoiding winning any awards, mm-hmm. but that winning awards is better. And like,
so much better.
And it took us 15 years to start winning awards. And I fucking agree. So I got that shit. Emmy.
He's referring to the Emmy over his shoulder. And I mad respect. If I wasn't thrown out of my house by my wife, they would all be behind me right now. But no.
You were asked to politely leave.
I was. I willingly left. But yeah,
did she let you take your Emmys now?
I'm looking for a more permanent place to live. I didn't want to put my Emmys. I trust my Emmys are safer in my home right now.
mine is on loan from my mom. I gave my Emmy to my mom.
Wow.
Because like I said, like, well, I mean, without you, this wouldn't have been possible. And so mm-hmm. I gave it to her. And then when we built this Zoom nook this past year, I asked my mother if I could get it back just on loan for the Zoom period of our life. I don't know how long this is going to be. It might be forever, but.
Well, you're in Miami, by the way, you're in Miami.
I am. Yeah. I just spent the weekend twerking on a police car.
Yeah, I was going to say, you might be in that fucking nook forever. Because you're going to have like one of those like tents they throw over for termites. You're just going to
duck and cover. It's like the Cuban Missile Crisis right. is still going on here. Yeah.
So here's the thing, and this will definitely sound like a humble brag, but there is a joke behind it, and it's a humble brag. And it's not even a humble brag, it's a brag. So that is that like the first Emmy or the only Emmy you have, and you gave it to your mom?
Yes to both.
Okay. So you are such a better son. I waited till I got my fifth and final Emmy, and then said, here you go. And then when my mom moved, and she moved from Arizona to Atlanta, she's like, I don't want to ship this, will you? Like take it. She came out. I held on to it. She's in Atlanta right now. I have never given it back because I like the way the five Emmys looked on a shelf. So you're a much better son.
I like to think that after each Emmy, you went, you know what? My next Emmy, I'm going to give to my mom. And then
Is your mom just sit at home with a People's Choice Award now or something?
the cable ace. She has the Webby.
Did she have your Twitter award?
No, wouldn't give her that. The way I was looking at my, you know, my mom's like 83, 84 in July. And I always thought, well, more loaning it, I guess, at this point, you know?
You're going to get it back.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah. Actually, speaking of that, that's a great segue that you had no idea you were just giving me.
Yeah, please.
Danny, I'm about to show y'all what my mother, so my dad passed away. Brag. It'll be nine years ago. It'll be on Tuesday, 9 years. But my mom, through this 9 years, will continuously, like, just continues to send me things that I gave my dad as a gift, because she's like, I'm just gonna throw it away, because there's nothing, my parents had nothing in common. They had literally nothing in common. So whatever I gave my dad, she could care less about. In the mail a few days ago, Billy, I just thought it was funny because it has your name, but this is what she sent me.
Billy Bass.
You got a Billy Bass.
I bought this for my dad like 20 years ago. Oh, wow. And he had it like in the little office area. And I thought it would be funny to say Billy, but now that you've said
this thing
about
this
getting something back here.
This thing was the bane of the existence of every Walgreens checkout person for decade.
It was also awful, I thought, to like anybody that was in comedy that had, or anybody with a sense of humor, you'd go to someone's house. And I mean, I'm from Texas, so it was like everyone had one on the mantle and they thought they were the only people. You know, it's like, hey, you're funny. You seen this shit? And I'm like, wow, what's it going to play? You know, it's great. Oh, man.
Jenny, I just thought of one thing that your parents had in common.
Who?
You.
Oh,
they did, and they were on the fence too the whole time.
Yep.
My mom's still considering leaving me at a fire station.
God damn it! I told you to pull out.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking Danny, are you obviously a great son, but a great dad? I remember this tweet of yours. Like, again, I just love, like, again, it's like going back to this writer's room documentary on modern, like this idea that will never happen of mine, but like, but you tweeted once about, there was the episode where I think Alex goes to like Habitat for Humanity or something for the summer or to build that. And they like Claire and Phil are like, it was like sunshine and lollipops and butterflies. It was the most magical summer of the family's life. And like, and then she comes back and the and like all the shit goes back to normal and everybody's at each other's throats and destroying. And you tweeted that your daughters hated the episode or your daughter, because it was about the summer that your daughter went away.
It was. God bless her. She's great. But it was like, we had no idea that it was like, oh my God, there's no conflict in the house. She was off and she was off doing this, and it was all really, and she was doing something really noble. Like she was doing she was like in Central America, like or her school, like because she wanted to be a nurse at that, you know, and she was doing that stuff. But I just saw an opportunity. Yeah. Yeah,
totally. She's like the best person in the household, but yet she's gone, and the conflict just dissipates.
It was that nugget that sort of drove the other two apart. You never knew, you know.
Yeah.
But
anytime, like when you're in the house with your family, and like I have, my sister's 2 years older, and even when I was married, I had two stepkids. They'd come, you know, when we had them for the week and everything. It always made a difference. There'd be that one time where like, oh, that my, you know, ex-husband would be gone, or, you know, my mom goes, like, whatever, when that one family member leaves, and how the dynamic just, it shifts. And sometimes it's for the worse, and sometimes it's for the better. Sometimes you're like, oh, wait, you were the glue that held this shit together.
Sorry. I apologize. That's not COVID, but it is from the COVID vaccine. I got my second shot.
Actually the safest person.
I am.
It's the antibodies talking.
Yeah. Now it's so exciting just going back to worrying about quaint things like herpes.
I couldn't believe
something far less contagious.
I couldn't believe like how much better. I had got my first shot this week and just how quickly I got it. Cause I had heard these stories of like, I went to a CVS literally from like pulling into the parking spot, checking in, sitting down, getting the needle in my arm. It was 6 minutes. Like it was the,
wow.
I couldn't believe, cause I had heard all these nightmare stories of people waiting. And when I got it, it was like, okay, boop, in my arm and done. And then I thought like, God, I have literally been on house arrest for a year. This little thing, you know, like, wow, I can't believe that quickly. Like something's already starting to really felt like a game changer. Did you feel that way, or Billy? You like?
I was in LA.
Oh, no shit.
Week of March 10th, and it was our last scheduled day of production on our last documentary was Thursday, March 12th in Santa Barbara. We had an interview shoot, and so we flew in Monday. Because we get to LA very rarely. So, you know, we had like a week of meetings and then the shoot on Thursday. We built made a trip out of it. So fly up on Monday, already wearing masks, you know, and we also know we had a meeting at CAA, and CAA, you might remember, was they were the first ones to shut down in-house meetings. Like they were the first ones. So it turns out we met like in the, you know, one of the restaurants behind, you know, the building. And so Monday we are fist bumping. Tuesday we're elbow bumping. Wednesday we're kick tapping, right? Shoe tapping. Thursday we're in Santa Barbara. The woman, we come into her house with the crew, and she's like, I was just talking to my book agent, and he said, what the hell are you letting these people in your house? And we're like, ha ha. And we just like, let's quickly set up and get this thing shot. Friday morning, nothing. Remember, it was the Friday the 13th. It was the zombie apocalypse. Yeah. All of our meetings were canceled. Oh. We were on, and I had, you know, the night before, 24 hours earlier, we're on the red eye Friday night. So 24 hours earlier, I go to, you know, check in or whatever. And you can see that the flight was pretty full. Like you get to see what seats are available and everything. We get on that plane Friday night, ghost plane.
Yeah.
Everybody planning on going to Miami for the weekend was like, peace, you know, and it was, that was the beginning of the end. And that was also the last time I, you know, did any grooming as well. Yeah.
Well, I think
I felt that Danny and I laughed about it. We were in a year ago.
Yeah.
We did shows at the DC Improv, and it was the last weekend that the DC Improv was open. Like that, the next weekend they were closed. You, Danny, you took off.
Yeah.
A few days before I did, I hung around. My cousin lives there, and it was like from me leaving LAX, getting to DC, that weekend of shows. I mean, I was even laughing. I've listened to my sets where I'm like, everyone in the airport looks like Michael Jackson on trial.
I know.
Look at this shit. How stupid. I was just having a field day laughing about it. And then just cut to me getting dropped off at the airport at like 5 a.m., getting on this flight. And I had like, I think just like a bandana. I'm like, I should just tie this around my face. Like, I look like I was going to rob the plane. Like,
this was
like, oh, okay. This is,
are there any pandemic protocols that you guys will like maintain? Like, is there anything like new shit that like, whether it's Zoom or whatever, like for me, it's masks on a plane. I'll never not wear. I always got sick, a cold, like whenever I travel, like round trip, I'd be down for the count for like 3 days to a week. Like I'll always wear a mask on a plane now. Like every Asian person after SARS, you would always see someone at the end. And we'd be like, what are they doing? And like, because they're geniuses, you know, like
we're idiots.
Yeah, I'll 100% continue wearing a mask because it's just too easy not to. And I'd always, this is what a jackass I am. Like I've always been the person when I go fly, I'll have a hat on or I'll have a hood because I don't even want to put my head, you know, on the headrest. And I'm like, that's how, like that, I cared more about my hair than blowing in my, or I always keep a scarf on and just kind of, because it's nasty, like, especially when you're on like an international flight or even Miami to LA is a long ass flight and you're like, people are coughing and sneezing. And
I think for me, the big thing I'm going to try not to do once this is all lifted is my, you know, when I meet somebody, you know, if it's a business meeting or a friend, I'm not going to spit in their mouth anymore.
No.
in Miami, we're very, like in Miami, it's like very, where it's a very Cuban American culture. So we literally like lick the face, the cheek of the person we meet. We like, like it's so, and I'm like, why are we so touchy feely? It's just like, it's just totally inappropriate. But for me, I think the biggest thing is Target curbside pickup. It is the greatest. I will never go inside a Target again. It's like Flintstones. Yeah. You know, they throw the shit on the car tips over. It's like, it's the best.
Yeah. A curbside pickup with groceries, like Target, all the grocery stores. I've done it at Petco to get food for my dog. I mean, everything. Like you don't, and I've never liked going to the grocery store. So it's kind of a, like a bonus for me. Now I can be like, oh, I have to, like, I can't, I have to.
That's amazing. Know,
go pick it up. But it,
I know. I love it too. I've gotten used to that new normal. And I think that's going to be hard to stop. And I also think like, you know, where I can, I don't mind. I mean, I like a personal meeting depending on what it is, but occasionally it would never even occur to me to FaceTime or Zoom with somebody prior to this. And now
there's like the running joke where people always say like, oh, this could have been an email. You know, when you have to in and you do something, it could have been a Zoom. You know, there's so many things that we've proven, like, shows have been written, like an entire season of a show has been written on Zoom. It's like it's possible. I mean, there is something to be said for, I work better when I've had writing partners. There is something to be said for being in that environment where you're all sitting around and you're just like hanging out, shooting shit. And like, but it can be done. It is possible.
Absolutely.
It just, I do wonder like how many more things are going to be via.
There's a lot. I think there, you're hearing this in like commercial real estate rental and like office space. And it's like, oh, do we really, I mean, we can have an office, but do we need this giant one?
Right.
I mean, we can be rotating people in. I think it's going to be good on like new mothers or new fathers, or, you know, I think people are starting to see there's a way to do this. And that's ultimately probably good for the environment and all that.
And I think there's also going to be a huge appreciation for teachers now that parents had to homeschool their kids.
Until there's not again.
And you have a young daughter.
I was going to say, I should live so long. We'll see people appreciate teachers finally.
That seems nightmarish to me, is like that, like, you know, anywhere from like fifth grade to eighth grade, because now that they actually have work to do and disciplining them and they say no. It's like that. My friends who are in that phase, ugh.
We recently had Jerry O'Connell on the podcast, and he has twin girls that are 12.
Yeah.
Fraternal twins. Danny also has fraternal twins, and yours are like what, 10 years old?
Mine are going to be 23 in April.
Yeah. One went to the U.
Graduated. One went to the U, by the way. She's my nerd.
Yeah.
Majored in money laundering?
No. In fact, it was such a waste of Miami. She's never had a drink. She doesn't do drugs. She's like, it's like living with the Surgeon General my whole life. So you're in Miami. It's nursing school. You didn't have to spend all that much on that.
That's a nod to how much she loved you, that she went literally to the school that was furthest.
Exactly.
Literally twice as close to Cuba than to home. Closer to Colombia, I think, than to home. I didn't start drinking until I was 21. Now Jenny can attest, I've certainly made up for lost time.
Yeah.
But I went through the entirety of Dade County Public Schools in Miami and the University of Miami without smoking pot, doing drugs, or drinking until my 21st birthday. I had my first cocktail.
Wow.
And I remember
violence. No, you didn't beat anyone up.
My roommate in college drank enough for both of us, I thought, and then he had sipped for several livers at least. And I remember getting to, and then I started making, my friends in high school would make fun of me, but like, all you do is make documentaries about drugs and you've never done any drugs.
By the way, Cocaine Cowboys, one of the greatest.
Okay, well, that's a good segue, because we've been talking a while and I want to get into your career, because I am. Cooking Cowboys is truly, if I was to make a list of my top five documentaries, I would put that on there. I think visually spectacular.
Yes.
You tell this story, the tone of it matches the thing you're talking about. And I just want, but leading up to that, and I loved the one on the 2000 election. It was just like, it brought a chill. My son was born December 8th. Of 2000, and so they hadn't called the president yet, and for a little while we flirted with the idea of calling him Chad, but I also I didn't want him to be remembered.
Thank God you didn't do that.
But did you set out to when you were at the U, were you thinking, I'm going to be a documentary filmmaker? I'm going to turn my camera off for a second because I have to blow my nose so bad because we're talking about cocaine, but really.
I kind of want to see it.
No, I don't want to. I'm even going to keep talking. You'll hear.
Yeah, you probably want to mute versus the tone.
Well, I don't want you guys to see. Like,
you're
going
to really blow your nose. You're like, I'm going to turn the video off, but you're going to hear. I feel like it's violent.
Hold on. No, I want. Here's the full effect. Oh God. Yeah. See, that's why I didn't.
Jenny ducked. Jenny ducked. Okay.
I was like, looking for my mask. Do I have one on my desk?
And I'm definitely going to sneeze. So, okay. But when you were in college, was this what you wanted to do?
I feel like I want to put on a poncho, like the splash zone at SeaWorld now. Are you okay? Danny, are you okay? Should we call an ambulance?
No, I'm good. I'm good. Just the camera's off. I'm literally put on her mask.
There you go.
It's so funny.
All right, doing it nation. BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting for football and basketball this season. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. Always your continued source for sports wagering information. BetOnline features live betting, free contests, live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable. We're the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, and even golf games and events. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code CLNS50. That is CLNS50 to receive your rewards. BetOnline, where the game starts.
That's amazing.
One of my, I have to say, like Cocaine Cowboys, I love Screwball. I remember when we hung out that one night, you had just finished doing Screwball. And I found that, if you haven't seen that, Danny, put that on your
list. I haven't seen Screwball. The reason I was putting it off was I was using one of these eye cams, by the way. I'm sorry. I didn't want to.
Oh, my God. It looked like you were just like, I was like, what the hell is that?
Okay, this is great. This is great.
Is Screwball still on Netflix?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Danny, put this on your list.
Oh,
when we do the things, basically the end of our show, and we always recommend things. We'll just Billy does rule.
This is Danny. Danny just asked you what it is, and I want to hear Jenny Johnson pitch Screwball.
I do too.
All right. So the huge baseball, Major League Baseball scandal with all the steroid use. Okay. The whole story behind that, and the way that Billy, it was so smart the way y'all did it, Billy. Because I also appeared twice on Drunk History, so I have a special love for like that reenactment over, you know, when the actors are like, you know, I did the second episode. Remember, Liev Schreiber did the second episode of mine, and I'm like, I'm hearing my voice come out of Liev Schreiber's
That's amazing.
Mouth. Okay, Screwball, they did this, so it's all these accurate conversations, except they use kids.
Oh my God, I need to see this.
There's a kid that, when I say looks exactly like Alex Rodriguez, like exactly. And they put him in the fucking Yankees baseball uniform and he's taught, like it is the most informative, entertaining documentary I've ever seen.
I can't wait to watch this.
The full story of all this and all the lies and all the deceit, all the people behind how they got, you know, they were getting steroids, like everything. The whole story is told so specific, Billy. It's so beautifully out of the mouths of children.
So, well, of course, like it obviously was Drunk History inspired because we took the actual first person accounts and interviews and then had 8-year old children lip sync him on set in full costume and facial hair on the actual locations in many cases where the real incidents occurred, including Live Nightclub at the Fountain Blue in Miami Beach and the Ritz Carlton in Key Biscayne. And so like, so I get to, so Jenny, I'm in LA years ago and Jenny's like, come over, hang at the house. Let's drink. Let's chat. And I was like one of the funniest people I know. And I'm like, can I show you? Because this is my first comedy, Screwball. And comedy is fucking hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it is fucking hard. I don't know. To this day, I don't understand why, like, no respect at the Oscars, like, forever. And, like, it's the hardest fucking thing to do.
Yeah.
And like, I guess I, Tanya, is the closest I feel like they probably ever come to like really honoring comedy, I guess, performance anyway. But like, it's so hard. And so I'm like, will you watch this comedy that we're in post-production on? And so I put it on. I don't remember how we did, but like, you were introducing me to technology too.
Oh yeah, I had like my Apple TV and I was like, oh, I can drop it onto my TV. We watched it.
What is this alien technology? I was so impressed. And so, and of course, and Jenny gives me her Wi-Fi password, which reminded me of a Jenny Johnson bit she has about auto connect. I'm like, if I ever come here with my wife and my fucking phone, my phone auto connects to your fucking Wi-Fi, we'll be found out, right?
Yeah.
So irregardless, as we say in Miami, because we're illiterate, but I use it ironically.
Oh, they just added it to Webster's Dictionary, by the way. Webster's just added irregardless to the dictionary.
The Miami of today is the America of tomorrow.
Yeah, you beat us down. You beat us down.
You're unfortunately, the Miami of today is the America of tomorrow. But long story even longer, I put on, this is a seminal moment. And I don't mean seminal as in like, you know, the college football team, but like in like my life, I start to play Screwball for Jenny. And she is like dying. And I'm like, oh my God. Cause like, listen, it's, documentaries, they're like children. You make them, you raise them, you mold them. And then like you send them off into the world to sink or swim and everybody judges them. And you just have to kind of let go and let God and just sort of hope for the best. And like, And they're also like children in that we all have our favorites. We just don't tell anyone who they, what they are, you know, which ones they are, you know? Yeah. And so Jenny loves it. We got tired and dry and I like, and we turned it all off. And Jenny's like, I think I sent you a link.
You sent me the link so I could finish it.
Yeah. I'm like, I need to finish. And I'm like, you don't have to finish it. You don't have to say that for me. You can just watch the first half that. And she's like, no, I want to spin. And like, honestly, Jenny's like endorsement and approval like gave me so much confidence about
anybody who's done comedy. I think anybody who does any kind of art at all, it's like when you get that from somebody you respect, I mean, people always ask, like, are you writing like for America, or are you, when you're, how do you know? It's like, all we're writing for is I'm making other funny people I think are funny laugh. Yeah. That's like my main goal. And then I have to have trust that people will follow or not. And that's what you experience.
Yeah. I remember Danny, like we talked one time, I think maybe the first pilot or something I wrote, and I was just like,
oh, I know.
I got to turn this fucking thing in. I have to turn this in. And I was like texting if you were talking, and I think I sent it to you. And
yeah, you did.
And that was like really nerve wracking. And what made me feel better was when Danny goes, I've been doing this for how long? Every time I have to turn that script, I think this is the one they're going to go, you're a fucking fraud. How have you made it this far? Like, how did you do? Time. Yeah. And so anything you do that's art, and that's what you do. I personally, I mean, I know like how nerve wracking it can be to show somebody something you do, but I've always been a fan of your work. I would say Broke is probably my favorite of your, I love that documentary. It was just so good. If you haven't seen that one, Dan, it's like a 30 for 30. It's called Broke. It's
Which one? And I think I know this one. Well, it's about, it's
when, professional athletes have made like all this money and then they go broke.
Yeah.
Like, how did it happen? And Billy managed to, like, you found these athletes that were willing and okay with sitting there talking about their failures. And a lot of people aren't. A lot of people are so tough and arrogant and they don't want to say,
no,
like, I just fucked up. You know, I did this, this, and this. But that one is just because it's so real and it's so genuine. But with like with Screwball and everything, that story and the way that those players, even to this day, like, that really happened. Those guys cheated. Like, it's 100%. We know they cheated, but nothing was really damaged for them. Yeah. Like, there was just a little.
Oh, you mean Screwball?
Yeah.
With Screwball. That's what I meant. Like, with Screwball, that. Yeah. So I like the way that I think taking the kids and making a comedy out of it, like, it also was like such a funny jab to them. Like, look at you fucking, you know, like childish, like it mocked them and they deserve to be mocked.
All the adults acted like children. Like, that was, but also sort of the idea that of these sports figures as role models and you know, for kids, like, and that to me, what Screwball was about, it's funny, of all places, the Wall Street Journal nailed it. They called it like a sports documentary about America and about how, and like this scandal was about it. And to me, that's what it was about. It was about how like people like, and of course there's the Miami connection invariably of like the steroid scandal with Alex Rodriguez and the Biogenesis thing down here. But like this idea that like, whether it was Major League Baseball acting a fool and breaking laws down here, or Alex Rodriguez, the highest paid baseball player of all time, cheating, or, you know, the message was what I call through the Trump era, the new American values, which we used to teach our kids honesty, integrity, the golden rule. And then the new message seemed to be, the new American values were lie, cheat, and steal. And that's how you get ahead. And I'll tell you, I was doing a Q&A on Screwball with the 8-year-old kid who played Dr. Tony Bosch. I'm using, for the listeners, I'm using air quotes on doctor because he was not a doctor because Miami. And so honestly, every time there was a headline in Miami about fake doctor discovered in Miami, you know, fake dentist, I was like, that's not news. News would be real doctor found in Miami, you know, so... You know, man bites dog. So like I'm in a Q&A and an audience member asks like, what's the message? What's the takeaway? And the 8-year-old kid who played doctor is like, ooh, 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 me, me. I'm like, dude, you don't have to raise your hand. That's your Q&A too. Just jump in, dude. So he says, you know, lie, cheat, and steal. And that's how you get ahead in America. Wow. And so by the way, 42-year-old saying it, whatever, 8-year-old kid, it's fucking devastating. Like it sucks the air. Sucks the air out of the room. Like people are gasping, you know, for but that's it. Lie, cheat, and steal kids, you too could be the highest paid baseball player of all time. You too could be the commissioner of baseball. You too could be president of the United States. Like that, and that to me, I always remember. And I think about it too, with the Clinton administration. After the Clinton administration, there was a spike in sexually transmitted diseases, specifically among teenagers. And many of them polled said it's because oral sex doesn't count. Okay. And so the guy, the it's a top down thing. There's right. a tone set. There's values that are transmitted. And so I'm wondering like what the long term, you know, ramifications and damage are of the lie, cheat and steal, like not sort of perpetuating positive values for kids. But ultimately, that's what Screwball is really about through the comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the ultimate destination is the end of us as a species. But that's amazing, and I can't wait to watch Screwball. Yeah. Did you study this though at University of Miami? Was this something?
Kind of. I triple majored at UM in screenwriting, theater, and poli-sci. Poli-sci was like my primary major, political science, and then also what was film, but you had to pick a track, you know, you had to pick production, screenwriting, or what was the third one? I feel like there was three. Oh, it was like the business
of it,
I chose screenwriting. It was the best learning how to tell a story. My best directing class was screenwriting. My best cinematography class was screenwriting. My best editing class was screenwriting. Once you know the rules, like, and then understanding how to tell a story, and because this is the ultimate goal of all of that shit, of every job on set. Yeah. So that was why I chose screenwriting.
And what was like, so you graduate, like, what's the break? What's the moment? I mean, I know you broke big for me for Cocaine Cowboys, but before that, obviously there were things leading up to that. So what was the thing where you thought like, oh, this is it? Do you remember the moment like where you got your chance to do it?
Well, don't remind me later. I started kind of breaking a little bit when Jenny was effusively praising Broke. I have a confession to make about Broke that I rarely make.
Oh God, are you going to ruin it for me? You're going to tell me Santa Claus ain't real.
But like, I don't know that I want to talk about it now because Danny set me up for such a great, like.
Let's hear this first.
He set me up for the triumph. You know, I don't want to hear the
tragedy. I want to hear the triumph, and then we're going to come back and I want to hear. And then I want to hear how it went wrong. So what's the triumph first?
Yeah, let's triumph. Good news first, so bad news.
The triumph, listen, I was studying film at UM. I'd been a child actor.
Oh.
That, you know, I say that without the baggage that usually comes with that, like the drug and alcohol abuse and the inappropriate, you know, kind of conduct on set. But like I had a pretty fruitful and fun child acting career. My first big break was on Parenthood, the feature in 1988.
Yeah,
that Ron Howard directed, and that was a ridiculous cast.
I love that
Steve
movie.
Martin. Yeah. Ridiculous. Ridiculous, that cast.
I'm sorry, I forgot to say that at the beginning of this. I always just think of you as a documentary filmmaker. I totally always forget that you're a child actor.
It's amazing. I love
me. Me too. It's only in the event that somebody asks an origin, you know, story that I have to talk about it. But like,
no, it's cool.
Yeah.
It's weird in Miami.
Your documentaries are so good that I actually forget.
And my child acting career is not. So
no,
good.
It was
so
great.
It's not. So
get the Emmy over here.
But yeah, not for child act. This is not a child acting Emmy, I'll have you know. But I, in Miami in the 80s, was a lot of work. You know, it was a lot of commercial work, a lot of TV work. I was never, regrettably, in an episode of Miami Vice. That would be have some lovely symmetry right up there with Danny's five Emmys on the wall. Perfect symmetry, you know.
For those who can't watch, he's wearing a pastel jacket over an equally pastel T-shirt.
Yes,
linen, I think, and the sleeves are pushed up.
Yeah. One of my favorite lines in Cobra Kai was like when they do the 80s dress up, and it's like a bunch of people think I look like Dave Johnson or Dan Johnson. Who's Dan Johnson?
You know? That's really cool.
So my brother was very gifted. My little brother was a very gifted athlete. And I, at my first at bat at the North Miami Beach Optimist T-ball league, I struck out.
High sports career.
That was my dad's dreams of my being a ball player. So I made contact with the tee, but apparently that's a strike. So I did not, like, that was it. That was so. Ow. So I started going. I had a friend who was on actually Jen Schatz, who is married to Horatio Sands. Jen Schatz was a neighbor from the shtetl in North Miami Beach. And she was on a Sears bike commercial. And I saw her, I was 5 or 6 or 7. And I was like, I flipped out. Like, that was Jen on TV.
And so
I said, I want to go out on audition. So I started going on auditions, and I booked every commercial, like every product sector you can fathom. I did a spot for, and my dad was my stage mom. Because my mom had read Shirley Temple and Drew Barrymore's autobiographies and was like, this is a terrible business. By nine, Billy will be on the coffee. By 10, he'll be on the pot. By 13, he'll be on the coke. You know, like, so especially in Miami, she was petrified. So
you can probably find cocaine in Miami. So
yeah, you can,
in elementary school. And so she,
and by the way, I love that she said you'd be on the pot.
On the pot.
That's how my mom talks it. The has to be placed in front of every
on the coffee. Yeah. And so, you know, so my dad was my stage mom until I booked Parenthood, because then we had to go to Orlando. It was one of the first things ever shot at Universal Florida.
That's amazing.
So they were shooting Nickelodeon stuff like Double Dare. They were shooting the new Leave It to Beaver syndicated series, and they were shooting Parenthood, mostly on location. But there was some stage stuff. The studio store was an office cubicle with drawers full of merch. That was the studio store, and so the whole place was tens of thousands of acres of just like hills and dirt. And then the Psycho house.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
For Psycho 4, they built for the Showtime movie. And illuminated with spotlights at night in this just sea of darkness, the fucking Psycho house just glowing. It was the creepiest.
Pretty creepy.
Creepiest thing. I would have never slept my whole childhood if
it
that was
so creepy. And so I go on set. And I'm the kid at the birthday party who curses. I say, that's the schmuck who brought the horse, and let's go watch the horse shit. And so, and then I had the one clean line I had, Steve Martin went on the late night talk shows with that clip.
Oh, man.
So, oh, wow.
Where he's Cowboy Dan at the birthday party.
Yeah.
Right. So I had this line like in the crowd, like, you're not Cowboy Dan, you're Kevin's father. He went on Carson with that. He went on Arsenio. My mom was flipping out, especially when she saw those 30-cent residual checks I got for that. So, which were almost as much money as the stamp on the envelope, I'll have you know. And so anyway, Ron Howard comes on set, who I know from at that point from Nick at Night, right? From Happy Days and from Andy Griffith Show. So he's a recovering child actor. And he is in charge.
Yeah.
And his whole family is on set.
Yeah.
Dallas is on the wife. You know, his brother had a significant role. Always did.
Quince and everyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone. His dad was. Right. It was in, like everybody has either a you know quick cutaway or has a significant principal role. And he knew everybody's name on set. Good morning, Billy. I was like. And to me, it dawned on me in that moment in 1988, like, oh, acting is like a kid's thing. Direct, like, you want to do what Ron Howard, like that, you want to be in charge of all of these people. Like, that's the goal, right? Like, acting is my after school activity. Like, not everybody grows up to be a soccer player or a ballerina, you know, that's what you do. You go into bit, like, and so I wind up in television production class. Oh, there's my last two pilots. Every year in LA, I did a pilot, which in those days, you can only do one pilot. You couldn't be on like seven series at the same time.
No, they locked you up.
Yeah.
They owned you for that. Yeah. And then of course they fired you the second they got picked up, you know, potentially,
you know,
So I got the cute firing a couple times, but my last two pilots in LA, Hilary Swank was in.
Oh.
So the second show was called Reality Check for Fox. And so I was already going to school in Miami, New World School of the Arts, which is like it was inspired by the School of the Performing Arts in New York. And, you know, we danced on taxi cabs, you know,
outside,
you know. So I get flown out from a tape.
Uh-huh.
And I'm already retired, you know, at that point, and just trying to go to school like a normal kid and not on set or whatever. Valley Professional School. That's where I was enrolled. Is that still a thing?
I don't know.
It's like a strip mall fucking school. Ooh. I don't know. But sure, like.
By Warner Brothers, by the Oakwood, where all the kids.
Yeah, so Oakwood. That's where we lived for months at a time before we moved to Westwood. I was doing a Roger. I was doing Step Monster, a Roger Corman movie with Alan Thicke and Corey Feldman, when the Rodney King riots broke out. Jesus Christ, that's a fucking story. But anyway, the point is that
name drops so hard right there.
I'm sorry. Yeah, we're gonna clean up after the show.
Oh my God. Yeah, we're gonna have to do it. You're gonna have to, honestly. I'm gonna keep. You still have time, but I we're gonna need to have you come back. There's so much, but keep going. I want to hear this story.
No, this is a weird. So you guys are gonna don't spoil it for the audience because you're gonna know who I'm talking about. But yeah. Last pilot, the first pilot Hillary and I did together, we were on the Warner Brothers lot, and it was called Odd Man Out. And Ed Strauss and John Dechter wrote
My friends, and I remember. I helped out. By the way, I was, when they were punching up that pilot, I was in the room when they were punching up that pilot. Because especially John Strauss is a friend of mine, but yeah.
So this is 1.0, though. Were you with 1.0? This was 1.0.
Remember.
It was a presentation, which meant that we had 5 days to shoot a pilot for presentation money. It was like a pilot, but for half the money and half the time.
I remember it though.
So, but this is pre-Mary. This is there's something
I know,
about
Mary. I know, I remember. Those guys had a big career even leading up to that in TV. I mean, Mary broke them out, but keep going on.
No, so Hillary, we're on the lot, and every actress on that show auditioned for the new Karate Kid or for the next Karate Kid.
Oh my God.
Everybody went to that. They must have auditioned 1,000+ people for that, and they probably did the Mally Finn like shopping mall tour as well on that.
Of course,
you know, like going into the schools and all that weird shit, you know. And so we do this pilot. It was a lot of fun, and it doesn't get picked up. And late years later, there's something about Mary. They revive it, and it gets like a full. I think they did a season or two. It was kind of cool to see because the pilot was almost identical, you know, to the one that
I think I was on the pre-Mary one because I remember the other one. That's right. This is all coming back to me, but I think I helped him out on the pre-Mary one. That's so funny.
Well, thank you for us not getting picked up.
Yeah, I sabotage it.
You're like, I'm going to get 5 Emmys before these guys.
I know. Fuck these guys. I'm going to. God damn it.
So the next year I go back to Miami. Set in the tape. They fly me out. By the way, I'm always playing the neighbor. I'm like the white Urkel. Like I'm always playing the neighbor or the younger brother of the lead, you know, oh my God, Hillary Swank and Meredith Salinger were in.
I know Meredith.
Yeah.
They were in the Odd Man Out pilot. So like, I'm like in love in every direction on this show. I'm this little kid, like, oh my God. And so I get flown out, the little brother role. I get flown out and I go into this meeting. It was on Warner, like Lorimar. Was it maybe on the Lorimar offices? Yeah. And I go and do the audition and they say, wait in the lobby. And I was like, I've been doing that at that point for like fucking 10 years. I've been an actor and they're like, wait in the lobby. And so I'm there with my manager and my mom. We're going back to LAX, right? They come out into the lobby. I swear to God, they go, you got the part. And the entire cast is down the hall for the first table read.
Oh my God.
By the way, this is not an important role. This is not like down to the, like I'm the little brother.
Oh my God.
So I walk down the hall as if they're waiting for me. Like, who cares? The little brother. I walk in the room. It's Giovanni Ribisi and Hillary. I see Hillary. I'm like, Hillary, what are you doing here? She goes, I'm in this pilot. What are you doing here? And that was like in those days, the odds, they're doing what, like 150, 200 pilots. You only do one. And Hillary and I get fucking cast in the same show. The show was called Reality Check for Fox. It was by, here's what I don't want you to give away. The EPs were David Crane and Marta Kaufman. And so we were doing this little pilot. And the same year, David and Marta did a show called the Untitled Courtney Cox Pilot for NBC at the same time. So we do this terrible show. I'm sure they wouldn't be offended to hear me say that. But it was not a very good show. Reality Check for Fox.
And meanwhile, they're doing Cougar Town. So it's an amazing. Our audience is very sophisticated. They're very much ahead of where you are right now.
I asked you not to spoil it.
Okay.
It's really good. So we don't get picked up.
Okay.
I go on to become the youngest filmmaker, youngest director in Sundance history at that point in time in 2001. Oh. Hillary goes on to win two Academy Awards. David Crane and Marta Kaufman get a title for the untitled Courtney Cox pilot.
It is friends.
And I'm convinced that Reality Check not getting picked up is responsible for the success of at least those four careers.
I think that's a great fucking story. I also think there's a point to that story too. I'm going through right now. I'm dealing with a pilot myself, and it has been my experience that the best things usually seem to happen right after a crushing kick to the balls somewhere else. Yeah. Well, I mean.
Oh, wait, can you share the why I should be heartbroken about Broke that I love?
Well, that was, by the way, that segues. We went to Sundance with our first documentary, Raw Deal, A Question of Consent. And that was, and we made the front page of the New York Post with this little documentary that we made in Miami on spec. And a year, we decided to make it in January of 2000. And in January of 2001, we were at the Sundance Film Festival with it. And we took a leave of absence. Yeah, we took a leave of absence from UM just to move to Gainesville and make this thing. And I didn't own, I'd never been in snow before. I'm a Florida native. My mom was like, we got to go to Burlington Coat Factory at the Sawgrass Mills Mall. The only mall in the world shaped like a gator, by the way. And we had to go, there was only one Burlington Coat Factory in South Florida. We had to go there. That place is a fucking disaster. And so.
There's not a big market for coats in Florida. It's like, there's not a lot of Burlington Coat Factories in South Texas out there.
But apparently there's a big market for one shoe, because that's all you can find at the Burlington Coat Factory is one shoe. It's just like, it's horrible. So anyway.
The only thing less successful is a bookstore, I think. Right. Anyway, go on. I kid my Florida friends.
Believe it or not, a little sleazy. It was being on the front page of the New York Post out of the film festival where I was like, wow, this is sort of nuts. And
did the Post try to use some pun or anything in the headline, or did they give you like a credible?
Oh yeah, it was rape, lies, and videotape was the headline, and pretty salacious and
the
pretty
Post
effective.
Will never let you down though. Yeah, rape, lies, and videotape. Yeah,
but and, so how does that segue to Broke? We can't leave our audience hanging. We need to know this.
So, this is not up to me, like when we do good work or not. It is entirely, I remember reading, I think it was Seal, the artist Seal, Kiss from a Rose Seal. Someone asked him once, why don't you publish your lyrics in the liner notes of your CD? And he said, because it doesn't matter what I sing, it just matters what you hear. And so it's in the eye of the ear of the beholder. And that's the thing with,
I like that.
That's the thing with these things that we do, this art that we do. It's like, it belongs, you send it, I say, we send it out to the world to sink or swim. And it's what it means to the audience. Yeah. And, I always say the measure of a successful filmmaker is not box office or awards, but I love it, or critical response. It's that we get to work again,
and that we
make a living, good or bad, for better, doing something that we love doing. And in America, in the 21st century, what a blessing! And so for me, it's not up to me. But remember, I said documentaries are like kids. We have our favorites, but we never tell anyone which one. Yeah. So Broke is my least favorite. Broke is like my least favorite.
So I'm like the creepy neighbor on your street that likes the kid you hate the most.
You're not the only one. It's almost a constant reminder of failure for me that it was such a zeitgeist event. This LeBron tweeted about it on the premiere. Magic Johnson tweeted about it. D-Wade tweet. I mean, like, it was this, like, and because it was the first and only 30 for 30 that was a call to action, right? Yeah. That said, like, this is a problem we can all do something about tomorrow. Right.
That's what I liked about it. And, before doing comedy and writing, I was a television sports producer. That was my first, like, out of college. And I did this for 6 years. And so having been around athletes and watching, it's like, you're watching you're watching it happen before it happens. Like I could look at someone, I'm interviewing someone, you know, and I'm just like, oh my God, I could see it. You just signed. Like I see the leech people in your life that are just waiting for a hit. Oh my God, there's like, why do you have three Ferraris and different lime green and hot pink? Like, you can see that writing on the wall, and then, you know, it happens. They go, but you hear things, and then all of a sudden somebody is in rehab because of pain pill addiction. That's a huge thing. Is, you know, we had Rex Chapman on, and he talked very openly and honestly about his pain, because these professional athletes are like, we're just going to keep shooting you with cortisone. We'll give you however much Vicodin you need. And then the moment you're not on the team anymore, bye. And then you're left with this athlete who has a crippling addiction to opioids, and all the friends are now gone. No money. You know, it's like, and it, so to what I loved about it was having seen that and watched that as a sports producer, and then seeing some of those athletes actually in that documentary. And the ones that I did see that I had interviewed before, I just have so much respect for somebody who is able to just tell the truth and be like, look, this isn't going to make me look great. It's kind of humiliating. But yeah, there was one guy, I wish I could remember, that was like, I was paying more rent than the government. I don't even know whose rent I was paying, you know, and all of a sudden, oh, I got cut from the team. Everybody in your life leaves. You know,
first of all, Rex is a hero. He does the Lord's work. Shout out to Rex. Like
Rex Chapman,
he invented a platform and then uses it for fun, but for good. You know,
he's
so much good
out there.
He's almost like you, Billy. Where I forget, I was a fan of Rex as a basketball player, but I forget now that he was this great NBA player, because what he does using his platform is so fantastic, and he's just.
I want you to know that I don't have any movie posters of my own movies in my house. I think that's like awkward and ostentatious. Like in your office, that's where you celebrate your work and people come and you. So like I have movie posters in my house, but not of my. I have them as art of other movies that I love, but not my own. Except Broke, which I hung over my toilet, so that every time I took a shit, I remember the time I took a shit. Like in that and. For me, you know what it is? When you're making a doc, you're not in total control of the thing, right?
Yeah.
You don't have a script. Maybe you have an outline. Maybe you have an idea. Like, so from conception of like, you know, what it was in my head to the final product, it was the furthest away. That's the measure. Yeah. So like I directed Cocaine Cowboys 2, Hustlin' with the Godmother. I know shitty documentaries. Like, okay, I know, you know, but by the way, my vision for Hustlin', by the way, no G, an apostrophe, Hustlin' with the Godmother. But my vision for that was pretty consistent with the final product, to be honest, for better. But like Broke became so much, it became so much less about the people and more about the problem.
Yeah.
That it there was an emotional disconnect for me was a failing.
Yeah, yeah, it wasn't succeeding at the thing you wanted to succeed in, and so it made you not be able to appreciate the thing that it actually did succeed.
Yeah,
in. I get that completely. I have to pee so badly. can we take a 1 minute break and then get to the things we've watched? I'm sorry. I was like, it's like I'm gonna wet myself if I don't.
I'll be right back.
Thank you so much. It's like and
Billy, who was the guy, I forget his name, but he was the NFL player that ended up becoming like a financial advisor.
There's Andre Rison and Leon Searcy. Searcy.
It wasn't Andre Rison, but can I tell you how much I love the fact that Andre Rison's like, he's sitting there in the first shot. I had to pause it, Billy. I was laughing so hard because they're going to these athletes and it's like Andre Rison. I mean, obviously being a sports producer, I grew up a huge sports fan. I know all the athletes. It's not like, and this is a documentary I'm about to watch about people going broke. So I'm expecting a lot of humility, a lot of, you know, and it's like Andre Rison. Dude, straight up wore shades through the whole fucking thing. I was like, you know what? Man, you're not gonna let any of this shit get you down.
Oh my God.
I'm still winning.
Danny just missed Jenny's second prop of the podcast, by the way. Her second prop.
Oh man, I heard it. I couldn't hear.
It was talking about when Andre Rison was on Broken. This was a guy who is flashy. I mean, flashy as shit. And I remember, like, I was just saying, like, right when I watched the documentary, and I'm like, man, this is going to be crazy. And each of these athletes is really going to, man, they're just taking the heart out, throwing it.
So this guy comes out.
And it's like, here we go, Andre Rison. He was like,
stop. So by the way, so I have to tell you, because Jenny, you mentioned him, the financial advisor that you were citing. So the man's name is Ed Butowski. The reason why that may ring a bell, I saw Dan, the look on Dan's face.
Yeah, it does. Why do I know that name?
Because Ed Butowski was responsible for perpetuating the Seth Rich conspiracy.
Oh, that's not exactly it. Yes, of course. Yes.
So it's, you know, in a weird way, putting someone in your documentary as like who is an expert in the field and is an informed commentator. It's like Miami naming streets after people who later turn out to be drug dealers and murderers. Yeah. You know, it's like. You put this guy in your documentary and then he turns out to be like this
monster
Looney Tune. And like, and of course, like, to, and so there's another reason why it's just like,
No. Well, and it makes you feel better now. I haven't even seen it and I hate it now. So thank you.
Well, good. Don't
y'all feel like though, that there's a right now, because there's so many things that will happen. It's like, oh, did you hear this person did this? And they say someone's name and you're like, I fucking know that guy. Like, I actually have had a good experience with that person. And And then you just start thinking now, it's like, yeah, I could know someone like the back of my hand or think that I do. We have no idea. All we can do is like, you could put people in your stuff that do the best job. And if they turn out to not be great people, that's not on you. That people get ripped for someone else's behavior, you know?
No, I felt the same. Like, one of my closest friends was this kid, Adolf Hitler. And I had no idea, you know, because he was never that way, you know, in elementary school with me, you know? I mean, you know, but boy, people surprised.
We just thought his facial hair grew in weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. He followed me on Twitter, which I, you know, like, I'll make excuses for anybody if they follow me. Like, well... You know, we didn't hear the other side of the story. I think we're being like really not fair.
Well, I think this is going to be a long one because you're so fascinating, Billy. But I think
I do think we should have Billy come back for a part two.
I do because I want to talk more. I mean, I was like right before the pandemic, I know that Sophia Vergara was like who I worked with on Modern Family, Hold for Applause.
Just go ahead and say it. It's fine.
Yeah. But she, she was going to be on the, I think he got suspended the next season of Narcos, and I think she was going to play Griselda. Isn't that the one? Isn't that the who's the godmother?
Yeah, you're right. La Madrina, the godmother, Griselda Blanco.
She was cast to play that. So in the latest Narcos, I'd heard, and I have no idea like how that would work, but it seems interesting to me. But
sounds fascinating.
No, and by the way, that Cooking Cowboy. When people like. Want to it's such a good it is so educational and it's so like you were talking about like this is the last smoke I'll blow up your butt before we go to our recommendations but it is what I like about my favorite documentaries is that they're not just about the thing they're about the time. I thought OJ Made in America was a perfect documentary about the 90s and about a cultural moment and linking both Rodney King to that and where we were there. And The Last Dance
was like that too.
The Last Dance. Exactly. Yeah. And I think but Cocaine Cowboys was this because, I'm older than you guys, but I was young at the, I was currently doing cocaine at the time of the Cocaine Cowboys. I discovered that in college, but
I called this podcast Cocaine Cowboys.
It's fascinating context, and you're a really good storyteller, and I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, Cocaine Cowboys, I think I have a style, but like I always say, like we are there to serve the story. And so on Cocaine Cowboys, I needed to get everyone on the same page. And I kind of the style book was like, there will be no fades to black. There will be fades to white. There will be I think the average feature has about 1,500 cuts.
Yeah.
Cocaine Cowboys has nearly 5,000 cuts in it.
It felt cocaine. Yeah. It felt It felt speedy. I mean, I really respected that. No, but I mean that. Like, it's just like it.
I know that. I just like that cocaine felt speedy.
And as much as I love working with like the same composers and like, because the best composers are very versatile, I needed to work with like Jan Hammer on that, who did 4 or 5 seasons of Miami. But like, I needed the whole thing to feel like almost like it was a product of the time in which it was produced, because I thought that that was going to be sort of the winning formula on it.
I felt like I was sitting next to Philip Michael Thomas as you were doing the whole thing. I really did.
I'm just saying, also a dogfight was fantastic. Like,
that's the MMA one, right?
Yeah.
That is, by the way, that is DAWG. It's not a Michael Vick 30 dogfight. No, no, no. Yeah.
Although I wanted to see the Michael Vick one too.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, by the way, like, you know, I was there for like the first, the U part one was part of the first gaggle of 30 for 30s. Like before they even knew if that was going to take off, like before they even knew if they could get sponsors for 30 of them. Yeah. And now there's been like 1,000, and OJ is like a fucking masterpiece. Like OJ, it's the first documentary to become an EGOT. I don't know how it did it, but it did it somehow.
It was phenomenal. It was
the mic drop. It was the mic drop of 30 for 30s. And to me, by the way, like Screwball, for me, was like, because we helped sort of invent that genre of like the sports porn, unapologetic, urban sport, you know, team with the U. Like, to me, Screwball, even though it wasn't a 30 for 30, like, I took a film genres course. And we were taught the cycle of a genre, which, of course, is not a real thing, but it's, like, a thing that film theory professors teach you. But there's a lot of truth to it. And I don't remember all the cycles, but one of the end of it was parody. And they used horror as the example, because Scream, Wes Craven came back and said, here's this genre I helped in the to invent in the modern day. I'm going to come and destroy, essentially tear down, so that it could be reinvented with like the Blair Witch, which became the new, like that. And then it could start all over again. You could do traditional boo, you know, scare kind of.
It's a natural thing. You see it in comedy, but you see it in all art. And I really, it's my favorite thing about that stuff, is because you reach a point, a saturation point, where the audience becomes as conversant in the style as the filmmaker. And so, they know what to happen. So you can either then fall into tropes, which were original 10 years ago, but they're not anymore, or you can take those tropes and you can thwart expectation and still tell the story. And in fact, it's a better way to tell the story now, because you have this educated audience.
And that was Screwball for me. I want to tear the thing down. I was thinking Wes Craven's Scream, in the genre cycle. I was like, I mean tear it down in the most reverent, respectful sense. And
when what you did, like, I feel like even like the OJ, Made in America, you know, I remember hearing about that, and the first thing I read was like, oh, it's, you know, 7 hours long. And my first thought was, how many fucking more times do I need to hear how OJ killed his wife? Like, I this is going to be in one year. Like, I was fighting it, and then I kept reading people saying like, no, you don't understand. You don't understand. This is really, and then watching it, a game changer. So you can take something that, you know, maybe people have seen before. People know the story behind Screwball, but you flipped it.
Trust me,
the script on it, and you told the story where it's more captivating. It's far more interesting versus.
And I think Danny should write the dramatic adaptation. I think we should do a comedy. We should do a limited series.
You're getting really serious, but
we should do a limited series.
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's. I'm ready to collaborate. Let's go.
Heard it here
let's
first.
Go. Okay. But this is. I don't like to talk this long to anybody. I'm kidding. You're fascinating. Billy, when you're not making films or working with your new band Swan, what have you been watching that you like? Give me one or two.
What is with Billy Corgan in wrestling? I get shit. So people put at Billy COR into Twitter, and apparently my name comes up. And so, because Billy Corgan got at Billy, he must have been an investor in Twitter. But some shit happens on wrestling, and people give me such shit for it. But I don't know what is going on. Billy Corgan and they're like, why did you treat Daisy so mean? I'm like, what the fuck are you like? It's obviously some wrestling drama, you know? That like,
I don't know.
Anyway, so I told Jenny, oh my god, So I'm like, when I work, I'm like in the zone and I never watch anything. So I'm catching up on years of pop culture right now. I haven't like Queen's Gambit is like on the list. So what I've been watching, I'm watching two things. I'm just starting the third season of Cobra Kai, which is, if I ever come back, please have John Hurwitz on again, because I need to
I told Billy that we had John
kiss the ring. Kiss the ring. I will kiss his ring.
Something that with that show, it is just like, it is a cultural fucking moment that he brought out in
Karate Kid, Cobra Kai. I know, Billy, we're the same age, and so we both went through that whole like, oh my god, Karate Kid, it was so emotional and moving, you know. It's like, don't make fun of it, because it really. And then Cobra Kai just was this love letter, and it's such, then it became like, oh my god, I'm really into this series.
Over the course of creating art, there are infinite number of decisions that have to be made, from what to eat lunch that day, to lines of dialogue, to casting characters, to how they deliver the line. It's like unlimited, and any one of those being different. Like, you ordered the wrong thing for lunch that day, and you had diarrhea on the set, or you were in a foul mood, or you fought with your wife or your husband. Like, anything can go wrong. And to me, there's only one path to Cobra Kai being good, okay?
Yes,
or watchable. It's like,
no, those are small targets. We call it that all the time. It's a tiny, tiny target.
Yeah,
I feel like Jojo Rabbit was that.
Bullseye. Bullseye, yeah. It's alchemy. It is I have nothing but reverence. And by the way, it's a fun show. It's not like this, but it's a masterpiece somehow. Yeah. Of course, nostalgia is a hell of a drug. I mean, like,
sure.
And it trades on that, but the way it trades on it, and the way it creates a new parallel universe with the next generation, and
kids love it. You're like,
yeah. Way, like, the wife, like, Amanda is so, like, derisive of the main conflict, like, your karate telenovela, your karate soap opera, they have warring dojos,
her fantastic, too, like, I love it, and then when they, like, I love that they didn't take the wife and go, like, you two, knock it off.
Oh, that's the biggest mistake in all television.
Yeah, where she was like, you okay, fine. If you need to, like, she hit the, she's tough, and she's never the person that's the nagging wife. I love the female roles in that. I love that they had the girls also fighting. It's like, yeah, they're getting hit in the face by a guy, but hell, they kicked, you know, she kicked.
I love that.
And it's somehow a comedy, it's not disrespectful to the mythology. It's so reverential.
It's love. It's like you feel the love. They actually like the thing that they're talking about.
Yeah.
You could feel in everything from the actors to the, especially the actors, you know, the middle-aged actors and to the filmmakers. It's like, This is a meaningful piece of art for them, and they're handling it right. I love that, and I love talking to John about it. I mean, that was
And the middle-aged actors who sell the karate as convincingly as they did,
and they look fantastic, aged amazing.
I'm sorry, and speaking of, like, I guess it's a comedy. I don't know what the genre, but and speaking of different, like, William Zabka is brilliant in it. I think he's brilliant in it. The fact that there's like an alternate universe to like the bully perceiving himself as the bully, and they're not being a good guy and a bad guy kind of in the show. Like, again, I'm just starting to see that. It's fucking unbelievable. It's like this tightrope act that is like, it's insane. I have nothing but, and that is added to my lexicon, the term hide the plantain. Hide the plantain. as a Miamian, that's a pretty meaningful pop culture.
I probably rewound that three times when he's like, I'm not here to watch you hide the plantain. I love that.
Wow, that's amazing.
Cobra Kai, what else in your Modern Family?
What I'm watching, and we just finished Unorthodox.
Oh, I heard that's good. I heard it's a little Jewy.
I didn't finish it. It got a little too Jewy for me.
Yeah, by the way, speaking of which, the sun just went down. I have to run. Happy Pesach.
Get your sheet and put a hole in it, and we'll finish.
Yes, I mean, too Jewish, I believe, is what is what Der Spiegel called it. But very different from the book. The book, she just kind of leaves, puts on jeans, and goes to art school. Like that's kind of she doesn't. But like they've turned it into this whole like. I don't know, like Born Schlepremacy or something. It's like this, but they add the intrigue in not a very forced way. Like it feels like kind of organic and compelling. And I like the limited series. I like that format. I like the just like the finite 4 episodes, 7 episodes, 8. Yeah. I love that.
I love closed ended.
I do too. Like Queen's Gambit. That's how I felt about the Queen's Gambit. You should bump that up on your list. Danny, you told me to watch that.
Yeah.
I started
it. Into a sequel. It's like two queens, two Gambity, I think.
I was like, oh, it's about
Queens Gambit, Tokyo Drift.
No, that looks awesome. So chess. And then
I
plowed through the whole thing. I loved it.
And this is an HBO Max thing, but you know, West Wing moved from Netflix to HBO Max. And I just felt like I needed it was like the lemon sorbet course of the Trump administration. I needed to kind of cleanse the palate. And watch The West Wing, which is like...
It's fantastic.
It's fantastic.
It's so good.
It's so good. And
I caught
like,
it after. I didn't watch it while it was on, and I caught it later, and it's like, wow, this is really good.
I actually have my mom, she's on all my like Netflix, HBO Max. She has all my... passwords and everything. So like I'll put her on a show. She gets into it. I'm like, great. I've got a week before she finishes that. And then she's going to call and go like, what next? I told her to watch The West Wing and she was obsessed. Like she got so into it. It was on Netflix. And then I get this frantic phone call halfway through, like a week's later, and it's gone. It was because it went to HBO Max. And I was like, just, you want to talk about somebody when somebody blows something out of proportions, like, okay, that happened. Just take a deep breath.
What are we going to do in a real crisis?
Yeah. just take your little finger and go over to the purple square and you push that, type in West Wing and bibbity bobbity boo, it's all there. And she was like, okay. Oh, I just got freaked out. You know, she loved it. She was so sad when it ended. But it's a great series.
Yeah, I'm binging it. It's bad. And I worked with John Spencer on LA Law when I was a kid, who is just like, so good in that, and like, well, first of all, everybody's so good in that show. It's like it's like an alchemy. It's like Modern Family. It's an alchemy cast. It's
I play poker with weekly on Zoom with Josh Molina, and so we're always, you know, giving him West Wing stuff. I'm falling apart. My throat's closing. But Jenny, tell me what you got.
I'm just going to suggest watching all of Billy's stuff and not Justice League that. I started in May of 2006, I think, and I'm still trying to fucking finish it.
Well, I'm gonna drink some water, and I want to talk about Justice League. I'm breaking. I gotta leave at 5:30, but I gotta tell you this.
Okay. I started this. Let me tell you the best way to watch it though. And what I did at the beginning of the pandemic was, I just went like, I'm not a weed smoky person or whatever, but I'm not afraid of an edible. Like to sleep, but I just went and got like a bag of fucking really strong edibles and got the Disney Plus app and I started watching superhero movies, which I never did before. Like I just went through all the Marvel things. So this week I was like, all right, this Justice League. All right, let's do it. Why is it that fucking long? Like it looked like the whole time Ben Affleck was like, at a costume party he didn't want to be at.
I saw that tweet. I fucking love that so much. It's the perfect description of his performance.
It was like, there he was in this Batman costume with all this shit, and he looked ashamed. Like, he looked ashamed. The whole time he was just like, I gotta turn around and go like, I'm Batman. I gotta say some shit. But let me get an Uber and let me get the fuck out of there. Like, that's how it felt.
My favorite thing about it is, without a doubt, every time Wonder Woman comes on the screen... they start playing some weird sort of mournful chanting. And there is no scene she can walk into.
I was like, I got my period every time that fucking song came on. Like, it was stupid.
She's walking like just in the background of a scene to grab like a Sunny D from the fridge. And it's like, It's like every fucking thing is.
I tell you, one of my friend. Oh, there's a siren outside. But this comedian friend of mine, Jackie Fabulous, not her Christian name. Don't disqualify me. But
the Connecticut Fabulouses.
Yeah. I saw that she tweeted. She was like, "I don't know what's happening here, but I would let every cast member run a consensual train on me. Like, why is everyone so beautiful?" Like, literally everyone on that show was so pretty. They were like alarming. Like, it was like shockingly beautiful people throughout Justice League.
Jason Momoa should have worked out before it, I think. But you know,
I would have shampooed and dried his hair if he asked me to. Like,
oh my god,
Lisa Bonet should take a do a master class on dudes that like she made Lenny Kravitz someone sloppy seconds. That's
amazing.
Remarkable. But yeah, Justice League was my and then I watched the Falcon or Soldier. I just started that.
Yeah. I'm on the fence so far on that, but it seems okay.
Yeah, I mean there's only been one episode and I still had to catch up on all the Marvel ones. What have you been watching though, Danny?
I watched that, speaking of reenactments that I'm not sure it quite worked, but it was interesting, was the College Scandal.
Oh, I watched that.
You know, with Matthew Modine is playing the
which is in a weird way sort of like Screwball, the way that you use kids. Sort of
it's Screwball, but it wasn't funny. And
Operation Varsity Blues.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating. I was on the fence stylistically, but I was riveted the whole time. And I just watched episode one of Into the Storm, the Q documentary about what these fucking nuts. It's I have this, you know, they released two. I couldn't bring myself to watch two, not because it's not good, but because it's just like, it is the end of civilization when you watch it. But apart from that, that's it. That's what I got. Hey, Billy, man, this has been fun. And I really do want to, I mean, we say this and we usually don't mean it. I would love to have you back and do a part two, like, and not like wait, like, you know, like in the soon, because I have so many questions still.
I'm gonna have you back on next week, maybe next Friday, we'll do it.
I was like, honestly, like I probably just babbled for now, but like I was so flattered when Jenny reached out, and so excited to be here with you guys, and so I mean anytime.
Good, because I'm gonna I'd actually love to. I'm gonna watch these suggestions of yours that I've missed, and I know I'm gonna want to talk to you about it. And you're fucking delight, man. It's great. Yeah. And you came on. I've had my voice is going from fucking COVID, but you carried us, man. That was fucking great. So thank you.
Thanks, Danny. Well, appreciate that.
Yeah,
well,
Jenny.
Thank you.
Billy, Jenny, you carried us. Thanks, Danny, for that.
No, Jenny, if it makes you feel better, I feel feverish, and I didn't mean that because you know I love you.
I know. I was a joke.
I just think you're the best. I find you with a light.
Yes. And Jenny Johnson, I love your vaccine. Thank you. Jenny Johnson and Johnson.
I love your work. I actually wanted to get that one just because of.
Is it true that you get a nickel for every Johnson and Johnson vaccine?
Yeah, it's going to be like all my residual checks from Johnson.
but if there turns out to be side effects, she's also liable. So.
And I may show up whenever I want and stay in your house and like hang out with your pets, give your dog a bath.
Yeah, make baby shampoo for you that won't make you cry. Well, thank you, thanks, Doing It Nation. I'm just gonna call them Doing It Nation.
I like Doing It Nation. I feel like that's a great name for our.
We got some great fucking shows coming up, including the return of Billy Corbin. Thank you so much.
Thank y'all very much. Thank you, Billy.